this is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We were at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We were literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala.
This is Scene.
Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Have you ever been in a situation where you were like wringing your hands, thinking about how to remove yourself from the relationship, the friendship, but just not having enough mental capacity or heart to end things and walk the fuck away? Mm. Have you? Because
mm-hmm.
I have.
Yes.
In this episode, we're going to talk about ending relationships. So with people, with situations. And then in the following episode, we're going to balance things out with discussing what happens next. What awaits us once we leave things that no longer serve us.
Yeah.
A lot of us are familiar with loss. It's a pretty natural part of being human, I would say. Check me on that, Lala. You're the therapist.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Co-signed by the therapist. It's true. We experience, you know, times of growth, times of reflection, times of loss. The cycle repeats itself. It's pretty much standard human practice. So we want to start from a place of recognizing that loss is completely natural. And the sooner we can accept that, the less we will, you know, hold on so tightly to things that aren't for us. Because I truly believe that what's for me is for me. And what's for you is for you.
Oof.
Right?
Words to live by.
You know?
Yeah.
It's simple, but like when you say that again and again and again, you're like, I don't need to fight with this person because what's mine is mine.
Yeah, it's simple, but it has layers.
Uh-huh.
There's levels. That's the kind of thing you start to learn on a deeper and deeper level.
Yes.
As you go on.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We're going to begin by exploring what it means to come to a place of leaving people, situations, or states that no longer serve us. We're going to talk about what keeps us in these situations for too long, what are some of the qualities of situations worth leaving or ending, and we're going to end with a little teaser on what, you know, this has to do with personal healing work, because I think these things are really linked.
Yeah.
But first things first, though, Lala, when you and I first conjured up this idea for an episode, where was your head at? How are you feeling entering this conversation?
I'm so glad we're talking about this. Honestly, loss and grief are these subjects that so many of us avoid because of how painful they are, even though they're a natural part of life. That doesn't make it any easier, the fact that it's natural, the fact that we all go through it.
Yeah, it's like shit still sucks.
Yeah, it's still so painful, but I think we all really benefit from having these conversations so that we don't feel so alone with our grief. Because like everything, when we're able to connect with others who are having similar experiences or who can understand or witness or, you know, give empathy for our feelings, I don't know if it makes it easier, but it balances it somehow, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it makes it make sense.
Yeah.
Maybe a little
maybe.
Bit more.
Yeah.
For me, when I think about this idea of leaving, relationships are always the first thing that come to mind, like especially leaving, you know, toxic relationships. What do you think of?
Yeah, same thing. I've had to leave a lot of relationships because they were toxic or abusive, or later in my life I've had to leave because they were holding me back. Mm. So it's something that's what comes up first for me as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we're definitely going to talk about, you know, getting the toxic motherfuckers out of our lives for sure.
Yes.
But we're going to keep this shit expansive like we always do. Make it nuanced. Like, you know, for example, what about when a person isn't necessarily toxic for you, but they aren't really anything for you at all? They're kind of like, I love analogies. So they're kind of like a buoy floating in the water, and you are a jet boat headed in a particular direction with a mission. So it's not like the relationship is toxic. This person is not like an oil spill or like a tanker or something like that. It's almost like the person is dead weight, for lack of a better word. They're just not along for the journey. And I think that fits into what we're talking about because we're really wanting to explore how we identify and remove ourselves from things that no longer serve us. And by that, I mean things that, yes, harm us, but also things that don't meet our needs, don't play a role in our growth or our healing, or that hold us back, like you were saying. And things that don't serve us are also just poorly aligned with our vision and our path towards social justice and personal growth, freedom, healing, all of that shit. Do you think I'm being too liberal? You know, am I being too cutthroat Is it beneficial sometimes to kind of keep, you know, that person that maybe is growing at a slower pace than you are, or that's sort of on their journey, but like the journey's different from yours? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think you're being cutthroat, and I don't think you're suggesting that we should just cut everyone out if they're not of use to us or something like that. Like, I think there's a difference when someone is draining you or getting in the way of what you need.
That's something.
Yeah,
true. Yeah.
I don't necessarily leave people or situations behind just because they're not the perfect situation for me, or they're not equal to the closest relationship in my life or something like that.
Yeah.
It's when, again, it's holding me back. It's getting in my way.
Yes.
It's actively working against me. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I feel, it's definitely not about cutting people out callously. For me anyways, I think it's more about like, you know, taking inventory and stock and recognizing that where we want to go is finite and wholly our own decisions, and understanding that sometimes people aren't in our lives forever to take us to that finite spot or be along for that journey. And it's tough. I don't want to sound like a total sociopath, and make it sound easy. Like, it's like, take this person out of my life, take this person out of my life. It's not like that at all. I have many friends. I have many close friends. I have lots of acquaintances in my life. Lots of people who play a role in my life in some way, shape, or form. And it's not like I can just take somebody out of my life on a whim. I'm a people person, you know? I want to acknowledge that I'm not a robot with no attachments to people. Like, I like people. So when I say this, I'm saying this because I've had to do this practice myself. And maybe now it's a good time for us to discuss what makes leaving so hard. You know, what are the obstacles in the way of us getting out the door and, you know, getting on with our lives, so to speak? I would say these include things like denial, prioritizing people's needs over ourselves, feeling a sense of duty or obligation, pride, and fearing a sense of loss or grief. Lala, feel free to jump in.
I will. And I just want to jump in now and say that this is exactly why you don't sound like a sociopath, because you're not like, you know what's really fun?
Just cutting
everybody out of my life and hurting them.
Bye.
The reason we're having this conversation is because it's so hard to do that.
It is.
And we need to learn how to tolerate how hard it is, so that we can show up for ourselves.
I'm totally with you. So let's jump in and start with denial. There's this phrase that's like, I'm going to butcher it because I like to butcher phrases on this podcast. The phrase goes something like this. It's hard to see things when you're so close to them, but when you take a step back and you have this sort of like wide lens, you can see everything for what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Is it like you can't see the forest for the trees?
This bitch. Okay, come on with it, come on. Say it again, Lala, for all the listeners. You know you're more eloquent than I am. Is it because the forest, if the trees don't fall in the forest, does this not ever happen? Maybe.
Yeah, sorry,
that could be it. But basically, I think if we're in situations where part of our needs are being met, but there's a whole other part of us that's being unfulfilled in a relationship or a job or a situationship or anything, I think it's way easier to sell ourselves short and keep ourselves occupied by the things that aren't that bad.
Yes.
And this comes from abusive situations, for sure. People who gaslight us and make us feel completely unfounded in reality in our perspectives, because they want to keep on minimizing these things that they're fucking up on and have us at their mercy.
Yeah, and I think we live in a culture that's so binary. Things are good or bad. And so when something isn't all bad, it's really hard for us. So we feel a lot of guilt, or we feel like, oh, what's wrong with me, because there are good things here, so why am I making it into something, or why am I not happy? Or we don't want to give up, especially if we are getting some needs met, and maybe we're not getting those needs met in other places. There was a long time where I stayed in friendships that were very hurtful to me, and I tried to get a level of intimacy that I couldn't get from those friendships, because I was lonely, and I wasn't getting that need for companionship met in other places. So it seemed like, you know, something was better than nothing. And sometimes something is better than nothing, but
not all the somethings.
Yeah.
Like, some things aren't better than nothing. Sometimes nothing is better than the something
that you're getting. Totally. And also, sometimes we have to adjust our perspective and realize we actually have something somewhere else now.
And then bringing it back to denial, is it like for you in the situations where you're trying to get intimacy from a person or from relationships that aren't really yielding those same things that you need, is it like telling yourself, I'll be fine, this is enough for me? Like,
yeah. And I think just being really hurt and then trying harder to be understood or get my needs met instead of being able to recognize this person can't meet this need for
me. They're never gonna. Yeah. They might never, you know, like they might, but they might never.
They probably can't. Yeah. In a lot of situations, people show you early what they're able to do or not able to do.
Absolutely.
But it can be really hard to accept that.
Yes. Oh, that's so true. It is fucking true. Because sometimes we want to see people at their best and we want to see all the beautiful things that we believe that they can be. And sometimes it's like, you know, when people, who said this? Oh, fuck, I'm going to fuck this up. When someone shows you who they are, believe them.
Maya Angelou.
Mm. Queen Mother.
Believe them the first time, she says.
The first time.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's on God. Okay. So denial is a huge thing that both of us have experienced in just trying to navigate our own feelings and being like, no, my feelings are actually right. Another is allowing other people's needs to get in the way of what we need for ourselves. This is huge for me as well. This is usually coupled with the feeling like we're going to let other people down if we put ourselves first, if we meet our own needs. And I think oftentimes this comes from a place of scarcity where we believe that there's a finite amount of happiness and satisfaction. And if I tip the balance too far over to myself, like I'm satisfied, I'm fulfilled, I'm good, then I'm putting somebody else out. It's like the sense of deference to others over ourselves, and it means we never take steps, or we seldom take steps, to make our own happiness or to end our own misery. It means we can lack our own agency in some ways because other people's desires or needs that they have from us take precedent over ourselves. And I just want to say, especially as women of color, if our communities rely on us just beyond playing like a singular role, like if we're doing many things and having to wear many, many hats, like we're breadwinners and nurturers and protectors and counselors and all the things, the emotional labor is always imbalanced with an expectation that we're always going to pull more weight.
Absolutely. And that's a really easy trap to fall into, where you can make space for their emotions and their needs and their boundaries, but you don't feel like there's enough space for yours.
And like what you end up having to do is just keep on taking other people's shit on,
yeah,
basically, right? Because it's like, no, this is my role. I think it comes down to also being like stuck in a particular role that you see yourself and that other people see you as. And a lot of the times it's the what other people are seeing you as that is the most, takes the most precedent. That makes
totally
sense.
And yeah, I think it definitely, it is a systemic issue, because I think women of color, queer and trans people of color, we get so little space in the culture at large, and so people aren't used to us having space, and they're a lot less cognizant of what our experiences might be. They're so used to not having to engage with the interior experiences of women of color and queer and trans people of color. So they just don't even think about it. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, they just see a flattened, oh, strong Black woman, of course she can take this.
Yeah.
Things like that.
And then I think also if we as women of color aren't able to see things for what they are and understand what's going on, we end up being taken advantage of by these people on these systems and stuff like that. Not to our own fault. Like, it's not our fault that we do these things or that, like, we take up this role or whatever. But I think the more that I've understood society's expectations for how I'm supposed to be, the more I'm able to push back on those things and kind of, I guess, change the narrative or subvert, like, what expectations are and center my own needs as opposed to others. But it's really, really tough to get to that spot even still, and I'm still working on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, because when you're so used to being put in that space, you're just used to being there, or you've never maybe known what it feels like to be given the same amount of space as other people.
Yeah to like center yourself
even. Yeah,
yeah, I'm with you. Another barrier to, you know, leaving situations or people is the sense of duty to see something through or stay when something doesn't serve us. You know, the sticking it through kind of mentality. I think about how before I leave a situation or a friendship or a relationship, either temporarily or for good, I always want to ensure that I've like done my best to show up for myself and that I've made the most of the situation. I made it a teachable experience. I'm trying to reconcile the situation, you know? And on one hand, I'm like, wow, look at me. I'm so thorough. Like, I'm trying my level best to like get all this shit done. But then on the other side, I'm so aware of how many times I've stayed in situations or relationships way too long, past the expiration date, and I'm like, this thing is spoiled and I'm trying to salvage it, like, and I look back and I wish that I just trusted my gut sooner and listened to my own needs that were definitely being signaled by my body and by my mind. I just didn't know how to listen, and I didn't listen, both of those two things. So yeah, I would call this sort of like having crumbs as a meal special, where we find one modicum of goodness to make our struggle worth it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so much there. I think duty is such a powerful thing. It's one of these scripts that we're given by our culture, where it's like your parents, they gave you everything. They love you. It's your job to take care of them. It's your job to show up for them. For some people, your parents are always going to harm you. But there is this sense, and you grow up seeing this message everywhere around you, and then if you do try to distance yourself from your parents, usually a lot of people, including your parents but not just limited to them, they will let you know that this isn't an okay thing to do. Oh, how can you not speak to your mother?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had people straight up tell me, you're gonna really regret not talking to your dad. It's your dad, like, how could you not talk to him? I'm like, the nigga left like literally a million years ago and hasn't looked back since. So why am I having to like bear the burden or this like obligation to like have a relationship with a person that doesn't want anything to do with me? It baffles people a lot of the times, because like you said, it's a script that we're always expected, especially when it comes to parent relationships. It's expectation that you're going to be there for your parents in their old age or whatever, or that you're going to do whatever it takes to salvage a relationship. I think I had those high hopes at some point, but time and time again, when you learn from experience that that doesn't work for you, you have to find alternative ways of dealing with your shit. And I think a lot of the times the people who have the most to say about a relationship with my dad literally have no fucking clue, because their relationship with their parents is fucking peachy keen. It's not something that they understand, or they have had a similarly turbulent relationship, but they've still put somebody else's needs ahead of their own. And they, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Often when we do something that somebody else on some level knows they need to do, but they're not able to, that's where they're going to act out the most.
Yeah, the defensiveness almost. Exactly. Yes, totally.
Exactly. But it's so hard to not take that on.
And like, I refuse to. There's been a couple of times where I felt like, fuck, maybe I should be like being more like,
it gets in there, that socialization. Yes.
100%. And you feel this like guilt, or you feel like, for me, I felt like a bad daughter. And then, I don't know, I just kept it moving. I just kept the shit moving, because like, basically I'm like, I deserve.
Yes.
I don't deserve that, but I deserve other shit. And so when you know that, I keep it going. Yeah. I don't need to dabble in that shit.
Yeah.
Oh, this one's a doozy. Another obstacle that gets in our way from leaving. Pride. I am a very proud Black woman, like a very proud person. And I think for a long time, it's always been like, never let them see you sweat. Don't let the haters, like genuinely don't let the haters win. It's been like my theme song in my mind. I didn't say that shit because it's corny, but like, that's what I've been thinking, sort of thing, like low key. And it's a sense of not wanting to let something go because you have so much invested in it. I've been in a relationship where dude wanted to end it, and I was like, so upset about it, because I was like, I should have done it first. Like, I wanted to be spiteful. Right. You wanted to be in control. Yeah. And it's this sense of like, what I put in is what I should get out. If I give love, I should get love. That's not how the world works oftentimes.
Yeah.
The world isn't reciprocal. People's relationships aren't always reciprocal. And it's like that.
Yeah, it can be really hard to admit when something that you're really invested in isn't working.
Yeah.
Whatever that may be, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job, whether it's a dream that you had.
Yeah.
It can be really hard to, because you've been so vulnerable in showing how much you want it, whether that's in a relationship with a person, opening yourself up to them or telling people about your dream or whatever it might be. It's a vulnerable place to be. And so it can be really hard to then hurt in front of people.
Yeah. it's the failure piece too, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes people who will love you when you fail or when something ends, like a relationship ends, and let's say they liked both you and your partner and you're no longer together. Mm-hmm. Friends that love you are going to be there to say like, hey, I love you and I want you to be happy and whatever decision you make is in your best interest. But then you're going to have some frenemies who are also going to say shit like, how could you leave this person? Or not say to your face, but behind your back even. And it's things like that worry that other people are going to judge you, which I have not found it useful to worry about the people who don't love me, what their opinions are of me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you don't love me, I don't give a fuck about what you think about me.
Yeah.
If you love me, if you're in my corner, I care. But if you don't, who cares?
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
And so I think it's recognizing for myself when I'm in the company of people who love me, pride is irrelevant. I don't need pride. Mm-hmm. I don't need that shit. It doesn't serve me at all. Like, how is that useful in my relationship with you, for example, to be prideful?
Totally.
If something gets fucked up in a part of my life and I'm scared to tell you.
What? Yeah, because I guess pride is a defense, really. Yes. So if you're with somebody that's safe, you don't really need that defense.
Exactly.
But a lot of the world isn't safe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. So the nuance there, it makes sense to have that sense of, I don't let them see me sweat, because, you know, there's people out there that wish you harm.
Mm-hmm.
100%. But when we're in our safe spaces or safer spaces with people who love us, the pride's got to fall away.
Yeah.
Right? And we can be honest with ourselves about what is actually going on and accept things. And then last but not least, grief and loss is another obstacle that keeps us from leaving. Or rather, I guess the fear of grief or loss. This keeps us staying in relationships that have been good for us, maybe at a time, or jobs or situations that were good at first. But again, it's part of this sort of being in conservation state. The fear that if we leave something, nothing good is ever going to happen to us again.
Yeah.
And I think this coincides with the belief that if we leave something, we might be making a mistake. So it's like we're not even able to trust ourselves that we're able to be okay again, that we're making great decisions for ourselves, that we're making decisions with ample information, or that we're correct in even wanting to leave in the first place. Like, it's kind of like a self-gaslighting situation.
Well, it's a scarcity mindset, right?
Yeah.
And it's so hard for us sometimes to believe that we deserve good things. And so it's like, oh, well, this relationship is terrible, but no one will ever love me again.
Exactly.
Because we haven't felt loved.
Yeah,
really.
100%.
Or it was really hard to get this job, so if I leave it, maybe I'll never get another job.
Yes.
It's fear, and sometimes that fear is very rational. It's based on experience.
Yeah. And I think this is probably the reason why so many of us stay in jobs, for example, where our bosses might be harmful to us, or the situation might be oppressive or just unhealthy, because it's like, it was so hard for me to get in this door. Why would I
exactly.
give up this up, even if it's shitty?
Yeah.
You know? And totally. So it's not like it's completely irrational, like you said. It definitely is founded in reality for a lot of us. Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you. So, knowing all these obstacles, how do we get over the hump? I think we can start by becoming familiar with the bigger picture of what's really going on and how this is tied to our own personal healing and growth. At its core, ending relationships with people or jobs or cities or communities or parts of our identities, right? Because it's a lot. Leaving the old behind comes from a place of recognizing that our needs have changed. It's about respecting our needs enough to take a step away from something, even though it might be bad timing or put somebody else out. And when we're leaving situations that don't particularly serve us and we're heading in a particular direction, we move closer in alignment with who we're meant to actually be. We can't be who we need to be if we're hanging out in places we shouldn't be, or with people we shouldn't be, or in situations we shouldn't be. How can we reconcile who we're meant to be if we're with those people, those jobs, those communities, those situations? I think the short answer is you can't. Sometimes you got to just slot the shit off and keep it moving.
Yeah.
We got to let some stuff go. And so I think this kind of goes back, in my mind, to Audre Lorde the uses of the erotic and the notion that we need to be able to tune into what is actually right and good and affirming of ourselves. Audre Lorde says, "The function of the erotic is to encourage excellence and to give us the strength to pursue it."
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
I think the flip side of knowing that is discerning when things are no longer useful to us and then identifying what we need to make more room for and make more space for.
Right, because when we get to know the use of the erotic, when we get to know what a deep yes feels like,
yeah,
then we also start to know what does a deep no feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Audre talks about how structurally women of color have been so distanced from that because that's the power that we innately have in our bodies.
Yeah.
And so when we know that, we're able to demand more, pursue the things we actually want, have that alignment that we've always been talking about. It literally is like that empowering thing that is innately within ourselves. Like, we don't need nobody else for it. It's not about anyone external. It's literally about ourselves. And we need to be in ardent pursuit of that.
Yes.
Shit's tough, though.
Yeah.
Like I just said.
Yeah. We live in a world that makes it really hard for us. It really does.
Yeah. It's not like it's something that just comes naturally, but I just want to pause here to take note of course, there's certain things that are worth fighting for or worth pursuing despite hardship. There's,
yeah,
you know, there's plenty of things, experiences, jobs, accomplishments, yada, 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 that have required our blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
And we can make peace with that. This doesn't aim to knock having perseverance or grit or determination. I just want to offer that these types of qualities aren't all that we need to be as women of color. Like, we're entitled unworthy of rest, of solitude, of gentleness, of kindness, of self-regard, of self-preservation.
That's such an important point, because this isn't about you should just feel good 24/7 and nothing should ever be hard. That's not the point.
Let's talk about how we entered in this space to have this conversation. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not always going to be peachy and easy at all.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's a difference when things are really hard, but they feel worth it.
Yep.
Or the something is hard, but it also lights you up, or it also is supporting your growth. I think there is a different quality to it than when it feels like you're just coming up against a brick wall again and again and again and again. And for some of us, we have so many negative experiences that we start to think that it's normal to just feel horrible all the time. And that's not what
natural.
It means. No, that's not what it means to work hard or have perseverance.
Yeah, it's like there are certain things I think that society tells us that we should just like pick ourselves up from our bootstraps and like work super hard to accomplish it.
Yeah.
But then there's certain things that I'm happy to pick myself up and work really hard to accomplish.
Yeah.
There's certain things that I'm just like, I don't give a fuck about that. But society tells me that I need to give a fuck about it.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like distinguishing, it's for me, it's been distinguishing the two things.
Yeah.
And that brings me to my next point, which was that everything around us that is forced upon us is not necessarily worthy of our time, mm-hmm, or our energy or our attention. We know that there are some things that we can and should remove from our lives because they've never, ever had a positive impact in our lives at all. And now we have the autonomy to change those things. And this is where the idea of ending relationships gets nuanced again. I'm curious, Lala, if you could share your experience with ending your relationship with white media.
Yeah, that was a big one for me because I grew up, everybody on TV was white pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And vast majority of movies I saw were white. All the voices, everything I'm seeing around me, it's all white people. It's not that I never gained anything from engaging with white media, but at a certain point, it's enough.
Yeah.
It's like I've heard the white male perspective.
So many times.
So many times.
100% saturation.
And not only that, I haven't heard so many other stories. So I've talked about this before on the podcast. A few years ago, I made a rule for myself that I wasn't going to watch anything that wasn't like 95% or more people of color. And I had to make a rule because it's actually so difficult to do. Once you make the rule, you realize just how bad the problem is because the vast majority of media is so white dominated. So once it's not just, oh, there has to be one person of color in it. It's like, no, it has to be 95 to 100% people of color. You start to realize how bad the problem is. But when I made that rule and I started only engaging in Black and brown stories and perspectives, my God, my whole life changed because it shifted what the default was for me. I started just having such a richer perspective of the world. And I stopped feeling the need to have 101 level arguments and conversations all the time. I stopped feeling like I needed or wanted to prove to white people that a certain thing was true or wasn't true. And it really set off a chain reaction in my whole life of, who am I spending time with? What are those people bringing to my life? What am I engaging with? Where am I focusing my attention and energy? And it really set me on the path to where I am now with being a therapist, doing anti-oppressive counseling, centering queer and trans people of color, being an entrepreneur, all of these things. I really feel like it came back to that decision to take whiteness out of the center of my attention and my world.
Mm. I love hearing you talk about this. It's so fascinating. And then I end up realizing how much white media is so consumed.
Yeah. Because it's so hard not to.
And it's like also the white media that I end up consuming, I think it's part of it is because the stories that they tell that center white, you know, white perspectives, I don't think that people of color have had the opportunity to play those kinds of roles even. For example, I started watching this show called Succession. Don't start watching it. You would hate it. It's on HBO. It's about like, this very wealthy, rich like media family. But it's like this entire show about like a super, super wealthy white conglomerate family that owns like billions of dollars of media. When are we ever going to hear a story about something like that with somebody that's not white?
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. And you know what I think the other danger of, for me, consuming so much white dominated media was the degree which it glamorized it without you realizing it. The first show that kind of started this decision for me, The Crown, came out. And there was a part of me that really wanted to watch it, especially my white grandmother really loves the royal family.
Yeah.
And so there was a part of me that really wanted to watch it. And I thought about it. And then having Indian heritage, being very aware, you know, living in Canada.
You're
being
just like,
very
aware, they colonized my whole ass people as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. And I live in a place where they've destroyed so many communities.
Absolutely.
Right, in Canada.
Yeah.
So British colonialism is
us to watch it, so,
you know, this is
for
the thing. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna watch this show where they're wearing these beautiful clothes and they're in these beautiful palaces, and there's gonna be a part of me that admires the beauty of it even as I know how awful it is.
Yeah.
Even if they depict how awful it is,
right,
there's going to be a part of me that's looking at that beauty of wealth and of whiteness.
And wanting it.
Yes.
And aspiring it.
Yeah.
Pedestalizing it in
exactly.
many ways. Exactly. Ooh, that's, yeah, I won't watch that show. I promise. I promise on this podcast I will not. So basically, yeah, I think from your story and your experience in divesting out of white media, I think it's really about honoring a boundary that is becoming more and more defined within ourselves, noticing that change, and then making moves that are in our own best interest and being honest with ourselves about what we actually need.
Mm-hmm.
And when we respect our boundaries, which we know because we recognize our needs, we can remove some of the noise and distractions that keep us from understanding and following in the direction that we actually need to go. The obligations we feel we have to others that may maintain our powerlessness, or the things that keep us from stepping into our power, those things matter less and less once we choose to honor our boundaries and our needs. And like, I want to say, this isn't like an instantaneous fucking thing.
Yeah.
This is a type of practice, right?
Yes.
You know, the more we honor our needs and our boundaries, the easier it becomes to leave things that no longer serve us any
yeah.
longer. It becomes like muscle memory, essentially. And I think honoring when our needs change can be terrifying, because our needs can be so tied to our identities and our roles that we play. And when our needs change, it can feel like we're unraveling this fabric of who we are, and people react badly. But it's really about honoring ourselves to elevate our own voices in our lives. And honoring the messages that our body is signaling to us. My big sister Elle always tells me, you got to play a major character in your own life, which I think is a really beautiful thing to say. I don't know where she got it from, but like, shout out to Elle, because I continue to think about that. We won't be able to play major characters in our own lives if we're not listening to our own bodies and honoring our own needs, right?
Yeah.
We won't be able to fulfill our purpose or step into our power before we remove ourselves from the presence and company of people and things that we know don't serve us anymore. So truly, the precursor to stepping into our power is getting the shit away from things that don't serve us anymore. And I just want to challenge everyone listening to consider letting things go that don't serve us anymore, even when it's hard. Mm-hmm. And I want to close with Woman of Color of the Week. I don't need a phone because it's Scotty Beam again.
Yes.
Is anyone surprised?
She's that incredible.
I just stan her so hard. So basically, this Nylon magazine had an interview with her where she talked about leaving this show that both Lella and I watch, or we've watched in the past, but actually I think we didn't even have a conversation about it. We were just like, we're no longer watching State of the Culture because it's become Scotty unwatchable. Beam is, I can't watch it anymore.
It's become unwatchable.
So if you don't know, then you need to know. But State of the Culture was this show with Joe Budden, Jinx, Remy Ma, and the beautiful illustrious Scotty Beam. I'm closing my eyes and like my arms are open because I say Scotty Beam, I just love her so much. But mm-hmm. she's lovely, and she details in the Nylon magazine piece about centering herself and her needs and removing herself from a situation in which shit was fucking toxic, and you could see it when you were watching. Like, we would watch and talk about it.
Yeah, you could see how miserable she was.
Totally. Basically, it was like lots of mansplaining, talking over her. And Scotty Beam is the kind of person who really does center women of color, Black women's experience specifically. And she rides so hard for us that I was, one, heartbroken when she left, but then also I was like, yo, she left this show? Like, this is a huge ass deal, because she rounded it out with like that Black feminist millennial vibe that the show desperately needs.
And she got demonized for it.
And she got demonized for
it. By other panelists and by the audience.
Wait, tell me.
Well, I mean, Remy Ma and Joe Budden often they would flatten her perspective. They would misrepresent what she said.
They made her sound crazy, quote unquote, all the time.
They would talk about her in a way that I think was demeaning. Yeah. And then she's sitting beside the known abuser, Joe Budden, who would get in her physical space.
Yeah.
Yelling over her, interrupting her, not listening to her.
Yeah. And so she basically was like, yo, fuck this shit. She
apparently was something behind the scenes with Joe Budden, too, that made her finally leave.
Yeah. And what's incredible is that, like, she left and everyone was like, how could she do that? She's never gonna get anything. There was a lot of speculation about it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, what happened next is she got a fucking awesome partnership with Nike.
Yeah, she's with Wilhelmina Models Agency. Yeah. She got that Nike deal, which was one of her dream, like, life dreams.
Yes, exactly.
She was just in a music video with BJ the Chicago.
I know, kid. I saw that. So beautiful.
Yeah, another life dream of hers.
Yes. So it's like things happened for her when she put herself first. So I just wanna say shout out to Scotty Beam. I stand a queen. And that's that on that.